Things over to your instructors to kick off today's live broadcast. And I believe we'll be starting with Laura Coughlin, who's an environmental scientist here at the EPA's Office of Resource Conservation and Recovery.
Hi, everybody. Can everybody hear me?
We can.
That's wonderful. All right. As Jean said, I'm Laura Coughlin. I wrote the final rule, so hopefully I'll be able to answer questions. This section should be about 70 minutes long. We're going to go over the exports and import section, both for new proposed shipments and for shipments that already have consent issued by EPA. So hopefully we'll get to all the questions or the sections that I know you have questions for. As Jean said, we're going to go over what we can of your questions. Those questions that we can't address, because there's over 280 people registered for this seminar or webinar, we will capture those questions, read through them after the webinar is over with, and address them to the extent possible on our frequent questions page, where they'll be sorted by topic. So if we don't get to your question, don't worry, we're still going to read it, we're still going to look at it, and you should check back often at the frequent questions page to see if it's been answered. With that, I will start these slides. First off, we're going to start with new exports, i.e. those that do not have a currently issued consent that prior to December 31st, which is when the rule requirements go effective. When I say hazardous waste throughout this section, it's going to mean hazardous waste managed under Part 262 and those that are being managed under the alternate management standards of Part 266, such as spent lead acid batteries, or universal waste under Part 273. Under the new requirements, you have full OECD procedures now, which essentially boils down to contracts or equivalent arrangements between all the parties, tracking document, an international tracking document to be used from the starting point with the exporter all the way to the receiving facility in the other country. And that is for all shipments, not just manifested hazardous waste. The manifest requirements will continue to apply because they're absolutely needed for domestic shipments, but the international movement document contains all the full information for international shipments, so both sections will apply. Exporters and importers are going to be required to have EPA ID numbers. Most exporters that are generators, either a small quantity generator or a large quantity generator, should already have an EPA ID number. But those that are brokers, otherwise known as recognized traders, often do not have an EPA ID number. And so we are now issuing that as a requirement to fill that gap. We are also specifying that spent lead acid battery exporters have to get EPA ID numbers. So for those people, they have to file an 8712 form with their authorized state or regional agency and obtain those numbers. And we've got information on the frequent questions page on how to do that, because of course the form right now does not reflect that. But there is instructions on the frequent page on how to get that. Consent numbers are going to have to be listed on the RCRA manifest for export shipments as of December 31st, and that's universal. The consent numbers are built from your notice ID number, the EPA notice ID number. It's the first six numbers, and followed by an E, followed by the last two numbers of your notice ID number, and then it's the last three numbers are your waste stream number from your notice waste stream ID padded to three numbers. So let's say it's waste stream 1, that would be 001. If it was waste stream 100, it would be 100. So that gives you plenty of room up to 999 waste streams, and I don't think we've ever topped that. The electronic process at the border is being phased in, and I'll get to that in a minute, but and export notices are going to be, are being required now, really, because any new export notice will be receiving consent under the new process, because it's a 30 to 60 day process, and you're going to have to be submitting them using EPA Central Data Exchange, otherwise known as CDX, and the Waste Import Export Tracking System, otherwise known as WEET. That is going to have its own section, so questions about that will be under that section. Lastly, CRTs are affected by this process, exports for recycling. They are also going to have a phase-in of the electronic process at the border, and they are also going to have electronic submittal of export notices as of December 31st. And lastly, for those of you that ship samples, if you are exporting hazardous waste samples and they are excluded for domestic purposes in excess of 25 kilograms, you will have to comply with the hazardous waste export requirements as of December 31st. You will have to obtain consent before you ship any of those shipments in excess of 25 kilograms. So I just wanted to call that out. Where they are, it's in 26283. And we've broken it up very explicitly. You'll see that the organization is very parallel between the export and import sides, and you can see it on the slide here. I'm not going to get into detail because I also want to show you a flow chart that's available online that sort of walks through the process. Can we go to that? Jean, can you?
Sure. Do you want the import or export?
Export.
Okay, bear with me. I'll call it up right now.
Thank you. There we go. All right, this flowchart is available online right now, and it's on your related resources page, the URL, where you can see that under the OECD process, you should have contracts or equivalent arrangements between all parties that note responsibilities, who's responsible for the waste when, just in case something goes wrong. And that's before you do your import notice or your export notice. If you're an exporter and everybody's, sorry, my fingers are doing a walking and I don't mean them to. If you are an exporter, before you submit your notice, you are also going to have to make sure that you've got an EPA ID number. I know at least one state that has seen an application to get an EPA ID number. It's not a terribly hard form to put forward, but there's some specific instructions to help you in the process if you're a recognized trader up on the frequent questions page. Just look at EPA ID requirements under the export side and you'll see that. You have to do an electronic export notice. For those shippers to Canada, we heavily encourage you to coordinate your entry with the import notice entry with your Canadian counterpart, because export shipments to Canada, Environment Canada has to match the notice information from the U.S. export notice to the Canadian import notice. And if there's any differences in the way the names are spelled, the addresses are spelled, the contact information is provided, it throws the whole review process into a holding pattern and may very well end up with the notice being rejected so that it can then be corrected on the U.S. side. Because unfortunately what they do is they say, you have to match up with the Canadian entries. We don't know what the Canadian entries are. So you need to coordinate that process with your Canadian counterparts. Once all the questions have been answered, because it'll just go into a do loop until then, but once the country has all the information they need, they will review it for compliance with their laws and regulations, just like we would, and they will come back and say it's either a consent, if it's hazardous and the proposed management is acceptable, an objection if it's hazardous and it's not acceptable, there's some problem, or they'll say, we don't control this as hazardous and the shipments can proceed as follows. One of the waste streams that I'm aware that the U.S. controls as hazardous that several foreign countries don't is K171, K172 spent catalysts. oftentimes they're green waste in the other country. That does not absolve you of the need to comply with hazardous waste export requirements in the United States. It's RCRA hazardous waste here. But so that's been a question that's come up from time to time in the year. So let's say you've gotten your green light, you got your consent. As soon as we get the consent from the country of import and the countries of transit, we will issue the AOC, the Acknowledgement of Consent Letter, and that's sent electronically. So it comes very quickly once we've gotten the information from the other countries. Once you've gotten that green light, then you get to, okay, now I'm actually shipping something. And, sorry, you get to the shipment procedures. For each shipment, you're going to have an international movement document. And again, for shipments with Canada, Canada requires the use of the Canadian movement document that is completely acceptable to EPA. And we put that in the preamble, and I'm saying it here. Mexico requires use of the Mexican manifest. The Canadian movement document includes all fields that are required. The Mexican manifest does not currently do that. However, you can manually write in the additional information that's required, and that way you don't have to use, you don't have to have an extra document. You can use the Mexican manifest from start to finish to fulfill the movement document requirements. We do not have a required form. We recommend that you check to see what is required with the country of import and use that form. Just make sure you've got all the required information. You also have to have the manifest within the United States. You go through and, this reflects all the what ifs. Is it disrupted? You're going to have to do notification to let everybody know that the shipment's been disrupted. Otherwise, it gets to the foreign facility. The foreign facility has 3 days to confirm receipt back. This should be a requirement in your contracts portion, because the requirement on the U.S. exporter is to have a contract that requires the foreign facility to do these items. So the foreign facility is supposed to confirm receipt within 3 days and confirm completion of recycling or disposal as soon as possible, but no later than 30 days after completing recovery or disposal on the shipment, and no later than 1 year from the receipt of the shipment. If the shipment gets lost or the shipment is rejected, you're going to have to do exception reporting. And that brings us to, I believe, the questions section. Can we go over some questions now? Yes.
The first question is, will non-U.S. locations be required to have an EPA ID number?
No, only U.S. exporters, U.S. receiving facilities, transporters that are based in the U.S. are required to have EPA ID numbers. Actually, let me correct that. Transporters operating in the United States have to have EPA ID numbers, and that's under the current requirements.
The next question was, is a freight forwarder and or NVOCC considered to be a recognized trader?
I have no idea what an NOVCC, so we're going to pass on that. But transporters can act as exporters, and if they're a transporter that has previously been transporting hazardous waste in the United States, they should have an EPA ID number. You don't have to have a separate one for your exporting activities. What you do have to do is update your form to reflect that you're acting as a recognized trader for export shipments. So you would submit the 8700 form as an update rather than an initial application for an EPA ID number.
Next question. I see that wheat is not defined in flowchart. What is that?
Waste import export tracking system. Sorry.
Next question. Does 3-day rule apply if we own the facility in Mexico?
Yes.
Next question. Will US EPA issue an AOC if the country to which the export request was sent does not object after a certain time?
That's that whole tacit approval. As we discussed in the proposed rule, most countries aren't operating with tacit approvals anymore. So we attempt to reach out to the country and get a response to them. We don't assume that no response means tacit approval. And in many cases, that tacit approval is only possible if the country has sent us a formal acknowledgement of receipt, that they have seen the notice and are beginning their review. That's what starts the 30-day clock under OECD procedures. If the country never sends us that, the 30-day clock can never start. And we've had a number of countries that don't send us that. So as a result, you can't assume tacit approval, and we will not issue an AOC until we get some kind of a response from the country.
Next question. Have they moved? How can an approval for samples be approved if the receiving facility needs a sample to approve a waste stream?
I'm sorry.
I'm not sure I understand that.
I'm not sure I understand that.
Okay, we may need to address that.
Yeah. Whoever submitted that question, feel free to resubmit it with more details, and we may have to address it after the webinar. Mm-hmm. At this point, I think we need to move on to, I've got my AOC. What do I need to do? So can we go to slide 8, please? All right. So I'm going to turn it over to Janae Tatum, who is one of our intrepid notice officers at the International Compliance Assurance Division within OECA.
Hi, everyone. This is Janae Tatum, and as Laura mentioned, I work in the International Compliance Assurance Division as a notice officer, and I'm also managing the build-out of the system, the electronic system. So requirements for export shipments with consent issue prior to December 31st, 2016. So if your export shipments comply with these requirements that listed on the acknowledgement of consent, thank you. I was wondering. So what's happening right now with export notices? Right now what is happening is if you submit your notices to us right now, and we've processed them, they're out the door, and you have received consent, then you are good notification-wise. If you submit the notice and we submitted it to the foreign government, but we have not received consent back from the foreign government right now, you probably are not good because you must have consent in place by December 31st, 2016. We have alerted other governments concerning this. We have tried to reach out and say, you know, we would really like to receive updates or consents. If you plan on consenting, please get it to us as soon as possible, specifically by December 31st, 2016. Of course, keep in account there is holiday season kind of coming up, so we will be working as quickly as we can with the staff that we will have on board, but if you submit a notice to us right now, that's paper, we're not going to process it because it's not going to receive consent by December 31st, 2016. So, and again, any any notice that doesn't receive consent by December 31st, 2016, they're going to have to be resubmitted electronically using the waste import-export tracking system with all the information that's required by the new regulation. It has to comply, basically, with the OECD procedures and requirements for notifications. So I'll move on. Any questions concerning exports? I'm going to try to read. Is Eva, are you still reading the questions for us?
I am reading the questions for you. This is a question for Janae, just popped. If we do not get consent from the foreign country before 12/31/2016, will we have to resubmit the application?
Yes, you will. You will have to resubmit the application electronically, because technically your current application does not conform to OECD requirements. So right now you're meeting what we still right now call subpart E regulations, and that's for notices going to Canada and Mexico. And so what we need you to do is resubmit that electronically so that it complies with OECD regulations.
The next question is, will the clock restart on the application at that point?
Yeah, I mean, yes, absolutely, because, again, to give you guys a heads up, the process that you've been dealing with has been paper, right? So every time you submit a notice to our office, a person has to manually enter every piece of information that you put on that notification. What's happening now is you enter your notification, you submit it to us, it goes through a brief QAQC process, and then it's out the door literally in minutes. We get it out to the foreign government in minutes, specifically to Canada and Mexico, because it's going to be transmitted electronically. Now, to other governments, other OECD governments, obviously we still have to send that by mail. But the point is, it's not going to take days or weeks to process your notification. So, yes, the time clock does start over, but the time clock is going to be moving really fast on our end. Now, we can't control the process with other governments and how quickly they respond. Now, as Laura talked about earlier, oftentimes the foreign government does not issue something called the acknowledgement of receipt. That is something we must have to actually start that official time clock. If we never receive that time clock, that AOR, then the clock doesn't start. Therefore, we can't tell you when they're going to respond, because they have not officially acknowledged receipt of your notification. And certain governments absolutely do not provide an acknowledgement of receipt. And some of you who have submitted notices in the past sort of know those countries that we're dealing with that do that. So that's why we always tell you, we can't tell you when it's going to happen, because they have not provided the acknowledgement of receipt.
And Janae, I would add something to that. Exporters, when we say you need to resubmit, depending on where your paper notice was in the process, it is probably entered in weeks. And you should, there'll be information in the WEET section. You will have access to your notices. So you can duplicate the notice that you previously submitted in paper, add the handful of additional items that need to be added for an OECD notice, and submit it electronically. You don't have to retype every field from scratch.
One question that's come up a couple of times, what if we have a current AOC in place, we don't need to do anything to continue until the AOC is up for renewal, correct?
Let me answer that. I realized after I handed it over to Janae that I sort of skipped over the slide on, yeah, there are a couple of things that you have to be aware of under your current consent, and that is listing the waste stream consent numbers on your RCRA manifest. Even under a current consent, you have to do that starting on December 31st, which is why I told you how to build the waste stream consent number based off your notice ID number and your waste stream number from the notice. That information is also on the frequently asked questions page, where it gives an example. For example, if your notice ID number is this and you're doing it for waste stream number one, this is what the waste stream consent number looks like. The second thing is the electronic process at the border. Currently, exporters of manifested hazardous waste shipments are required to give a copy. The transporter is required to sign and date the manifest at the time of departure and hand a copy of that RCRA manifest to the customs officer at the port. Under the electronic process, the exporter or his authorized filing agent, as part of their electronic export information, filing into Customs Automated Export System, will enter the waste stream consent number, the manifest tracking number if it's manifested, and the date of departure, in addition to the stuff that's already required under 15 CFR 30 for export shipments moving under an export license, which is what our AOC is. That system, the automated export system, will automatically validate against reference data that EPA sends them on a daily basis, related based off that consent number. And if that is validated, i.e. it's going to check against, you know, is it a valid consent number? Is the destination country for that consent number matching to what has been entered in the automated export system? Is the date of departure within the period of export that's been approved under that consent number? If all those things match up, and if it's required to be manifested, is it a validly formatted manifest tracking number? They won't check beyond that, but they'll check to make sure the format's correct for a manifest number. If all those matches and all the other data that's required to be done under 15 CFR 30 is completed, you'll get your internal transaction number, otherwise known as an ITN number. It's a clearance number for customs, and you'll be cleared to depart. You won't have to give a copy of the manifest to the customs officer anymore. That will all be done electronically. But we're doing a transition period. That system, all that validation process is ready right now, but we've got a transition that shouldn't take more than the calendar year 2017. And during that transition, the U.S. exporter is going to have to instruct the transporter on whether or not they are following the paper process or the electronic process. If they are following the paper process, they have to, in writing, direct the transporter to give that manifest copy to the port officer. And when I say in writing, it can be an email, it can be a fax, it can be a handwritten letter. There has to be some kind of written record so that the transporter has that documentation as to what they're supposed to follow, and so that the exporter can say, hey, I told the transporter to do it, and here's my record of doing it. Once everybody is able to test out the electronic process and we've gotten the kinks worked out with customs for the different modes of transportation, the seaports, the truck shipments, the train shipments, the air shipments, when it seems to be working smoothly, then we'll have an FR notice where we'll announce the compliance date. And at this point, you know, if we announced in June, then it would have, you know, X months from now on date such and such, we're going 100% electronic at the border. And at that point, everybody will be required to file in the automated export system, and paper documents will not be accepted at the border. So, sorry, I didn't mean to skip over that, but good catch. Any more questions?
There are more questions. Do we have some more time?
Yeah, we have more time.
Are you still reviewing the applications in detail using the WEAT system? What about possible errors on the submitter's part?
So if you submit the notification to us, you have to certify. There's a certification statement that you have to put in place, that you have to sign, saying Everything I've submitted to you is correct. If your notice, in fact, is incorrect, you will have to resubmit a new notification. There will be no corrections. This is a licensing process, essentially. And the system, as you go through, will basically prompt you to say, is this correct? You know what I mean? Do you have you filled in this piece? Actually, for requirements, it won't even let you save it without required information. So really, the big error issues that we've seen in the past where we have to do tons of corrections actually has to do with, like, address information, specifically, like, for transporters and oftentimes for the exporter address. So what you really want to do is pay attention to your exporter address. You want to pay attention to your transporter addresses. So just be sure that when you are doing that, consult your importing facility's permit application, because what you want to do is make sure everything matches on both sides of the border. Specifically, I advise this for the Canadian process, because Canada has a much more stringent regulation concerning the matching process. Their rules do not allow for flexibility and interpretation of addresses. So if you put, you know, Mighty Cars, Inc., and then the Canadian facility listed it as Mighty Cars, LLC, Canada will reject the notice. So what happens is if you submit it to us, we do the QAQC, it's out the door to Canada literally in 5 minutes. We submit it to them electronically. They will try to do a matching process. They'll say, these two things do not match. They will object to the notice, submit that back to us, and then we will send it to you, and we will submit an electronic notification of objection that the foreign government objects based on this issue. And then you'll have to resubmit a new notice when you want to, with the corrected information.
Next question. What if we resubmit the notice electronically and the original submission comes through, the AOC comes through?
I'm sorry, I don't understand the question.
I think what they're saying is, what if the country sends its consent on January 2nd? It's too late.
Yeah, it's too late.
And we've basically informed the countries. For processing purposes, we have to have a drop-dead date of switching to the new system. And so we've already informed the other countries, if it is at all possible, provide your consent or objection prior to December 31st. If it's not, then it's going to be resubmitted under the new system. So we've already informed them of that. I doubt anybody's going to be sending us consent in January.
Next question. What about materials from TSDs that are being rejected back to the foreign country? What kind of time lag will we be looking at?
So this will be an import shipment rejection. To be honest, I'm not aware of all that many rejections back to the country of export. If a facility rejects a shipment, what typically happens is an alternative U.S. facility is found to handle that one shipment. And under the OECD process, that is still allowable. So basically, the receiving facility, well, this is the import side. So let's hold off on that and talk about it during the import slide.
Could you define OECD?
The Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development. It's basically the European countries, U.S., Canada, Mexico, Japan, New Zealand, Australia, and Korea. There is a list of all the countries that are part of the OECD and have been approved to participate in the waste agreement up on our website. If you go into the international agreements section under the import-export information off the hazardous waste generator page. Sorry, that's running on. But if you do that, you will see a list of all the countries. We just added Latvia The reason I say been approved to participate in the waste agreement is they are two separate things. Chile is a member of the OECD right now, but they have not yet been approved to participate in the waste agreement. So they're not listed in our list online. The only place this makes a difference, really, is in terms of if you're submitting a notice asking for an extended consent period because the facility has been pre-approved by the country of import to receive shipments from other OECD member countries. That is the only time this will make a difference under our consolidated regulations. If it is an OECD member country and they have pre-consented, and there are a handful of Canadian facilities, I believe, that are pre-consented, and some Korean facilities, and a number of European facilities, you can request up to 3 years for the consent period instead of the standard 1 year, which, as you know, is much better for your business process. That's the only thing that's limited where it really makes a difference as to the OECD thing. The in terms of the processing, OECD member countries typically process faster. Non-OECD exports have to go through diplomatic channels. And so in terms of processing, they will take 4 months, 6 months. I think the longest one was a year and a half. In many cases, we never receive a response. They don't want to object, but they don't want to consent, so they're just silent and, you know, for the rest of time. And we treat it as an objection. So those are the 2 points with OECD, non-OECD. But the requirements of the regs do not differentiate.
One last question. Do we need to list every potential transporter on our notification, or is listing a single freight forwarder permissible?
From the U.S. perspective, a freight forwarder is acceptable, but I will warn you, Canada wants to see the individual transporters.
Just as a follow-up to that, what Laura is getting ready to say, Canada absolutely will want an exhaustive list of all the transporters you're going to use. So putting a freight forwarder on there will probably not match the Canadian permit request, and they will object to the notice, which means you will have to resubmit the notice correctly the next time.
Yep. So there's no limitation in WEETS as to how many transporters you can list. So you can get happy.
Any other questions?
Do we have time for more questions? Or?
No, I think we have to move on. We're at the 40-minute mark, and we still need to get through imports. So I want to be respectful of everybody's time. As I said, we don't get to your question, please type it in. We will read it afterwards, and we will address them to the extent possible on the website. Okay? So at this point, I think we need to move on to imports.
Okay.
So I'm going to start talking again. Import requirements where you don't have consent. And issued consent, and as I said before, hazardous waste includes 262, 266, and 273. The OECD requirements, EPA ID numbers, and the consent numbers on the manifest. You also, this is going to hit hazardous waste import samples that are in excess of 25 kilograms. Whether or not they would be otherwise excluded under the sample exclusions in 261.4 D&E. And we've changed the regs to reflect that samples being imported or exported have the additional condition of 25 kilograms. If the otherwise domestic exclusions limit it further down, that still applies. Like, you don't get a pass up to 25 kilograms. If something else is down to 1 kilogram, you have to comply with the 1 kilogram. But if it's like contaminated soil or something, you'd have a much higher limit, you are still limited if you're going to be excluded from the hazardous waste import and export requirements. There's a maximum limit of 25 kilos. That's a core OECD requirement. It's part of the decision. So it's just that's the reality. But I also want to call out maquiladora shipments. That's shipments from U.S.-owned facilities in Mexico that are maquiladora status for Mexican regulations. Mexico controls those as returns, not imports. We never see a notice for those. So we can't have issued consent on them. As of December 31st, consent will be required for those shipments. So I encourage U.S. importers that are arranging for shipments of maquiladora waste to submit a notice. And that, as shown in the next slide, is in 262.84B, notification requirements when the country of export does not control the shipments as a hazardous waste export. In some cases, it's a hazardous, non-hazardous situation, like K-171, K-172. But for the maquiladora shipments, even if Mexico regulates it as hazardous, they consider those shipments to be returns to the United States rather than an export. So they will never send us an export notice. So you can assume 100% that you need to submit a notice if it's RCRA hazardous waste. Jean, can we go to the import flowchart, please? Okay, as you can see, there's another lovely color-coded flowchart. Just as with export notices, there have to be contracts and equivalent arrangements. Assuming everybody has that in place, the foreign source is going to submit a notice or not, depending on whether or not it's a hazardous waste export in the country of export. If it is, then the foreign exporter has the responsibility to submit the notice. And as part of your contract arrangements, you should clarify that status as to who's going to be submitting the notice. Because we expect that if it's a hazardous waste export in the country of export, we expect to be getting it from that country. We do not expect to be getting it from the U.S. importer. The only time we expect to see an import notice from a U.S. party is in those cases where it's not a hazardous waste export in the country of export. In those cases, the U.S. importer is responsible for submitting a notice directly to EPA to obtain consent to the proposed shipments. And that's in 262.84B. Whether we get the notice from the foreign country or the U.S. importer, we will review it the same way. We review it for compliance with U.S. laws and regulations. And that includes, for example, if there were PCBs declared, we would review it and object to it, not because of a RCRA requirement, but because there's a TSCA prohibition on imports of PCBs unless you've gone through an actual rulemaking to get an exemption from the prohibition. If it was proposing import of otherwise prohibited ozone-depleting substances for recycling and or reuse, we would object because based on Clean Air Act requirements that the that only allows import of certain ozone-depleting substances for destruction in order to comply with Montreal Protocol requirements. So we review those things. And we also look, not me personally, regional personnel compare it to authorized state permits and other authorizations to see if there's any limitations as to the volumes that are being requested for consent. Assuming everything's acceptable and it's hazardous, we consent. At that time, we send a response back to the country or the U.S. importer. And we send a copy, so-called import consent documentation, to the U.S. recovery or disposal facilities that are listed in the notice. so that they have the information, and we're modifying the import consent documentation and the AOC letters to reflect, it's going to list the waste stream consent numbers. So you don't have to build it yourself. You can just look at the table. If there's a problem, we'll object. If it's not hazardous, then we respond that we don't control that it's hazardous waste in the United States, and the shipments may proceed. So, again, that's the notice and consent process. Assuming that shipments may proceed, imports... This little... Scrolling through is getting a little frustrating. Gene, can... Okay. Swear I'm not touching it now. Now you've got shipments moving. The foreign source is supposed to have the international movement document at the start of that movement, at the start of that shipment, and provide it to the initial transporter. And that movement document needs to follow and be signed. It's essentially an international manifest. But it lists the ports, it lists the transit countries' clearances. So that's why it's needed from start to finish. If it's disrupted before it enters the United States, there's going to be that notification process per the OECD requirements. If it enters the United States, at the time of entry, there has to be a RCRA manifest if it's required to be manifested. Generally speaking, spent lead acid batteries or slabs in universal waste are not required to be manifested, but some states are more stringent. So you need to know that. If it's required to be manifested, that manifest has to at least start at the border. If it's a truck shipment, oftentimes it will start along with the international movement document with a shipment from Canada or Mexico, and that's fine. It then is transported in the United States. Hopefully it's not disrupted. If it is, there's a process in the United States. Otherwise, it gets to the receiving facility. The receiving facility can accept or reject it. If there's a problem with characterization, there was consent to manage waste with 6 waste codes, and when they look at it, there's 3 or 4 waste codes that weren't accounted for that they didn't expect to see and that they don't have permission to manage. They reject it. As I started to address during that question, The receiving facility notifies the foreign exporter and EPA that, hey, we need to reject this. And the party noted in the contract that is responsible for finding alternate management goes ahead and finds alternate management. If there's an acceptable location in the U.S., it can be moved there with all due notifications. We have deleted the previous 264.12A1 one-time notice to accept a new foreign waste from a new foreign source. That no longer applies since we're doing consent in all cases, and we should have a record of what's going on. So if no alternate facility exists in the United States, which is theoretically possible, but so far hasn't really come up, then it has to be returned to the country of export. And it has to go through the export requirements, unless the initial the transporter sending or dropping off the waste hasn't left the facility yet. Which, again, is theoretically possible, but not likely. But assuming it's accepted, the U.S. parties, just like the foreign parties, they've got 3 days to confirm receipt back to the foreign exporter, the country of export, and you. After the electronic compliance date to EPA. Right now, under the new requirements, we will not be requiring that U.S. receiving facilities submit The confirmations of receipt and confirmations of recycling and disposal to EPA until the electronic capability to submit them in WEETS is completed. And that's why we have that separate proposed rule in the same Federal Register notice as the final rule. But those confirmations still have to be sent back to the country of import, and they have to be sent back to the foreign exporter. And the U.S. facility has to keep them on record, you know, has to record keep them for 3 years. U.S. importers and U.S. receiving facilities also have biennial reporting responsibilities. A U.S. importer is the RCRA generator. So if you are a U.S. importer, you have to count the actual quantities that cross the border under your EPA ID number towards your generator status. And if you're a large quantity generator, you're going to have to be reporting those import shipments as part of your generator reporting. If you're a TSDF, subject to Part 264-265 requirements, you have biennial reporting responsibilities as well. And you have to report on the incoming waste shipments, noting those coming from foreign sources. If you are both a TSDF and the U.S. importer, double duty. We recognize that making you do both would be kind of double reporting. We suggest, and this is on the website, and in the import requirement information, that you note in your TSDF incoming waste shipments that you are also the importer of record. And that from a that is acceptable from an EPA perspective to count towards your generator reporting. But you need to check with your state because, in point of fact, the biennial reporting is going into your authorized state. So you need to check with your authorized state as to what they find acceptable. EPA finds a note within your TSDF reporting to be acceptable. But you do need to make clear that you are both the TSDF and the RCRA importer for these shipments. And with that, I think we should go to questions.
Question. We import from Mexico that is first manifested to a U.S. TSC where it is stored for a period of time prior to reshipping to the final treatment facility using a second manifest. Do both manifests need to be sent to EPA in DC?
The second manifest wouldn't indicate that it was a foreign facility. The first one would need to be submitted. And to the extent that a U.S. importer is submitting the notice, the first TSDF would be an interim facility and the second TSDF would be a final facility. So you would need to list both. There is there are interim recycling and disposal operations that are basically accumulation, which would be the temporary storage prior to the final recovery or disposal. Next.
When does the clock start for the initial receipt notification, and when does the clock start for the confirmation of final management of waste?
The confirmation of receipt clock starts when the truck leaves the facility. when the destination when the receiving facility has signed the RCRA manifest, has signed the movement document, that starts, you know, that's
it.
It has to be sent within 3 days of that signature. The confirmation of completing recycling or disposal, as I said, it should be nice and vague, as soon as possible, but no later than, here's where the requirement kicks in, no later than 30 days after completing disposal or recycling of the shipment, and no later than 1 year after accepting receipt of the shipment. So recognizing that you don't always get to that immediately, you have up to a year to complete. You know. Next.
Can you explain the financial guarantees required in the contract in more detail, please?
No. We don't require financial guarantees under our contract requirements. We note that other countries might. And to the extent that other countries do require that, you may be requested to provide that as part of your notice processing. But the U.S. does not require financial guarantees for import or export shipments at this time. I think we have time for one more, and then we should move on to the...
Okay, I think this is trying to tie down one of the prior questions. My question about timing was tied to the issue of using two manifests for shipping or for shipments. It appears this could cause confusion.
As I said, in the situation that was described where you've got an initial receipt at an interim facility followed by a receipt at a final facility, you have time clocks for both those facilities. There's not just one time clock. So those two facilities should be in the notice, and both receive consent, one to act as an interim facility, accumulating shipments, temporarily storing them, until they get shipped to the final facility where the final disposal or recovery operation occurs. At facility one, when they receive that initial, the shipment from Mexico, that would start their three-day clock to send in that manifest and the movement document. When they send it off to the next facility, they have completed their interim operation. And at that time, they should send their completion confirmation. Facility number two that's doing the actual final recovery or disposal of the shipment has their own clock. And when they receive that shipment from facility one, they have to, they don't have to send in the manifest, because the manifest doesn't include that, but they have to confirm receipt, I believe, back to the exporter, and I'm looking up at the ceiling because I need to double check that. The confirmation of completing disposal at the final facility also has to go back to the foreign exporter. The point is, the OECD procedures really want to track the shipment from start to finish, understanding that there, if there's an interim and a final, that each has their own roles and their own timing. But we will double check on that and do a frequent question and answer on that for sure on the website. I think we should go on to current imports. So if you have import notices, you have a current consent, I'm not going to skip it this time. If you have an import shipment, you've got your issued consent, then the only new requirement that should be hitting you is listing the waste stream consent numbers on the RCRA manifest for the import shipment. We don't have an electronic border process for import shipments. So it's just listing the waste stream consent numbers. And you have the remaining period of consent to prepare to comply with the full OECD process. And that gets to the next slide, which is going to be handled by Janae Tatum again.
Hello. So what's going on right now with the import notices is that import notices that are being submitted to us by other countries, we are still processing those. As Laura has already mentioned, you will have to have consent in place for import shipments of hazardous waste or hazardous waste samples for anything over 25 kilograms that occur on or after December 31st, 2016. Also, so if your company right now, you're currently importing, you know, hazardous waste without consent, and maquiladora waste is a great example of that specifically, you need to submit a paper import notice to our offices listing all the information per 40 CFR 26284, and you need to do that as quickly as possible. We are in the middle of trying to build out an electronic submission piece for the import notification, this requirement to submit import notifications, but until that is built out and put out into production for importers into the U.S., we will still require paper notification. So that's where we are right now with import notices. Any questions?
This is just a quick reminder. If you're looking to submit your questions, you'll need to use the Q&A box, which appears towards the lower right of your screen. You can click your mouse cursor on the empty line or field at the bottom of that window and type up your message, then hit the Enter key on your keyboard to submit your question in. We may have had the instructors accidentally mute their phone lines. There you go.
Sorry.
The question is, what is the reason for not having a phase-in period for imports of maquiladora waste? 30 days when you ask notice 60 days in advance.
We discussed the maquiladora issue both in the proposed rule and in the final rule. I realize the timing is kind of tight, and to the extent possible, we will process maquiladora import notices as quickly as we can. But in reality, we are driven on the effective date by the executive order, and which requires the capability and regulations to be in place no later than December 31st, 2016. And we are working quickly. I'm not aware of any waste that would require where a delay of some weeks to a month would be that problematic, but we have put the word out since late November that import notices need to be sent in for maquiladora shipments. Understand that these will be processed completely within the United States, so we're not forwarding them to another country. So to the extent that we get them, processing should be relatively straightforward.
Good question.
Yeah.
A TSDF imports a waste from Canada, but the waste is rejected at the TSDF in the United States and has to be returned to the originating country. Will this have to go through the export process, or can the load be returned on the original manifest?
As I tried to say earlier, if indeed the original transporter has not left the building, so to speak, and you never accept it, you reject it right then and there, it can go back through the same, on that same manifest. If the transporter's left and you've done an initial signature on that manifest, you're going to have to go through the export process. There's just no getting around it. And that's in the regulations, if you have to re-export. But again, we're not aware that there has been widespread need to return shipments to Canada or Mexico, for that matter. What we have always seen is alternate management has been found within the United States at another facility in the U.S. And so that doesn't have to go through the export process. And aside from the notification to everybody letting them know that the acceptable facility has been found and it's being shipped there, you know, as long as it's documented, everything's good. It doesn't have to, immediately go back to the country of export. You can find alternate facilities in the United States.
So, do we still need to comply with the import requirements manually on paper? I thought the electronic system was effective on 12/31. Are you saying it is not until you build out the electronic import notice process? If so, when will it be effective?
There is a date. There are two compliance dates that have been defined in the regulations in Part 260. And one of them is the AEF filing compliance date, which is concerning the electronic border process for export shipments. The other is, and I hope I get this right, the electronic hazardous waste import-export reporting compliance date. Catchy title. And that basically is the date on which import notices, export exception reports, export confirmations of receipt, export confirmations of recovery or disposal, import confirmations of recovery or disposal, and import notifications of the need to arrange alternate management or or return of an import shipment will be required to be done electronic. All of the regulations concerning submittal of those items point to that compliance date and say prior to that compliance date, you either submit in paper or you record keep at your facility. And as I stated previously, confirmations of receipt and confirmations of recycling or disposal will be record kept at your facility. You'll be required to send it back to the other country. You'll be required to send it back to the foreign exporter in the case of an import shipment, but you will not be required to send a paper document to EPA until that compliance date is announced. That compliance date will be announced in a Federal Register notice. And yes, it's because the system has not been fully built out and tested yet. We don't want to require something until we know it will work. We've got export notices done. We've got export annual reports done. They've been fully tested out. The other parts are not built, and so we address the regulation by using the establishment of that compliance date. So I hope that answers the question. I think we need to go on to our health break. Because we're at the 70-minute mark, which by my clock, we're right on track. So I will, hopefully we'll see everybody back in 10 minutes.
As noted, we're going to take a very brief 10-minute break in today's webinar. For those of you who need to step away, now is an excellent time. The webinar will remain open along with the telephone lines, but the line will be silent during this break. If you need to, you can hang up and redial in, but I encourage participants to remain connected during this 10-minute break. Again, we will resume the live broadcast here in just under 10 minutes. Roy, if you're on the telephone lines and you can hear my voice, while we're on break, I was wondering if I could get you to come off of mute very quickly so I can check your audio levels.
Are you talking to me or Roy?
To Roy, and I'm not sure if he's at his desk right now. Again, okay. This is only to Roy, and Roy, if you can hear me and you are at your phone, if you could follow the instructions to come off of mute and say hello. So, Roy, I'm going to manually unmute your phone lines. Roy, if you are on the phones, let me know that you're there.
Can you hear me?
I can indeed. Okay.
Okay. I did not see any instructions to unmute.
That's okay. I've manually unmuted you. So from this point, Roy, you can control your own phone with your local mute button on there as needed.
Oh, great. That's what I'll do. Thanks.
Okay. Excellent. Thanks for confirming.
Sure.
Okay, it looks like we are coming back to our scheduled time to resume today's webinar. I'm going to call our slides back up and check in with our presenters to make sure they're prepared to begin.
Well, we're back, but the speaker will be Steve Miller.
Again, Steve, if you're on the phone, now is the time to go ahead and take yourself off of mute and let me know that you're on the line and you're ready to start.
Sure. Hi, Jean. Can you hear me?
I can indeed. I've given you some elevated permission, Steve, so you should be able to control as needed. And then again, when we're ready to get to your screen share, just let me know.
Okay, will do. So my name is Steve Miller. I am a contractor supporting the EPA, and me and my team help out with the development and maintenance of EPA's waste import-export tracking system. Today I'm going to go through a demonstration on registering for an account in CDX that will allow you to get into WEETS, go through the identity proofing process, which will allow you to sign the documents in WEETS, and then I'll walk through some of the notice, submission, and reporting features that we have in WEETS that you'll be using to submit your signed notices as you go through the import and export process. So as I just listed what we will go over today, I'll put up a slide with the formal definitions of what WEETS and CDX are. I'll just give you kind of a summary of those. We'll go over the two different user types and the differences between them within CDX and WEETS. As mentioned, we will walk through a CDX registration, and then we'll walk through some of the usage of WEETS. So for the slides, we'll only be on the slide for 2 or 3 minutes, and then at that point, I will share my screen. We'll go through a live walkthrough using a web browser. So what are WEETS and CDX? I know that Laura and Janae mentioned them a couple of times and mentioned the acronyms. WEATS is EPA's Waste Import-Export Tracking System. As you can see on the screen, there's a longer-winded definition, but to summarize, it's the web application where you'll be putting in notice data and reporting data for submission to EPA. CDX is EPA's central data exchange, and that's where you'll be registering for accounts. The CDX tool actually manages accounts for multiple applications across EPA, including WEATS. So if you've used CDX for other applications, you'll just be able to add WEATS as a program. It also supports Chrome Air, which is the electronic signature framework that WEATS uses to allow you to legally sign the notices electronically. And when we go through the demonstration, the separation between those two applications will become a bit more clear. So now there's two different types of users that we have in CDX and WEATS. The two that we're concerned about are notice preparers and notice certifiers. So notice preparers are users that are able to go into WEATS. They're able to create notices, edit notices, and create reports, but they do not necessarily have permission to sign the notices and submit them to EPA. Some common cases where a user would be a notice preparer without certification would be a Canadian representative that is preparing notices on behalf of the U.S. certifier. Now, of course, in that case, we need a U.S. representative in the hazardous waste industry to be the legal certifier on those notices, so those notices will need to be passed off to somebody in the U.S. to sign in WEATS to submit them to EPA. And, of course, the notice certifiers are the ones who can go in and sign the notices. Within WEATS, the certifiers and preparers can pretty much do everything the same except for the signature piece, which allows them to submit to EPA. So certifiers can also go in and prepare notices, edit notices, and prepare reports, but they also have the ability to sign the notices and submit them to EPA for further processing. Now, when we're signing up in CDX, the basic steps include creating the account in CDX. If your organization is already in CDX, you'll be able to link your organization to your account. If you're a certifier and you're going to be signing, you're going to need to be identity proof, and that's where the application is going to ask for some basic information about you. It's going to ask for home address, birthday, and the last four of your Social Security number. To make sure that you are who you say you are for us to actually allow the electronic signatures. For preparers, there's other screens that you'll go through. Preparers will not have to go through the identity proofing process, but you will need to set up a sponsorship with a certifier. So if you are a foreign representative that is preparing notices on behalf of a U.S. exporter, you will need to list a email for one of the certifiers. They will get notification. They will set up their accounts and confirm you as their preparers before they can go into WEATS and prepare the notices and reports on your behalf. So at this point, Gene, if you can give me the option to share my screen, I would appreciate it. So in the slides, starting to share right now.
Steve is going to pull his screen up in real time. Just a note, if it looks small on your end, I encourage you to use that forward button that appears in the upper right of his screen window to make his screen larger on your end. There's some additional controls as well and another button that will allow you to zoom in even further as needed. If you have technical problems following along, you can download the slides and sort of flip through a series of screenshots that may be helpful as Steve talks through the demonstration. And Steve, your screen is up, so whenever you're ready.
Thank you very much, Gene. And as Gene mentioned, the slides pretty much have screenshots of what I'm going to go through here today for reference. And, of course, as you're using the system, to be able to refer back. Also, within WEATS, there's a quick reference guide that has a little more explanatory text to go along with some of the screenshots to point you in the right direction if you have any questions. So what we'll go through now, we're going to register in CDX today. We are going to go through as a certifier, and as mentioned, the process for a preparer is slightly different, but a lot of the screens are similar. So from the first screen, when you select to register within CDX, the first thing you'll come to is the terms and conditions screen, and you have to basically say that you agree to the above terms and conditions before proceeding. So we're going to go ahead and do that and click proceed. And that will ask you which active program service you are using. As mentioned, CDX logins support a number of different applications within ETA. So if you already have an account, you'll be able to log in and simply add the program. Since we're doing a new account, we need to tell them which program we want to be associated to. You can either scroll down the list to find weeps, or if you start to type it in, it will automatically filter it for you. So we're going to go ahead and select weeps, the Waste Import Export Tracking System. And here's where you're going to be requested to select which role you're in, whether you're a preparer or certifier. So in this case, we're going to go ahead and select certifier and click on Request Role Access. And then we have a basic screen here to fill out user information. So bear with me as I go through this and do a little bit of typing here. I'm going to create a demo account here today. As mentioned, this account, or you will be identity proof before you are allowed signature and weep, so I am going to use my real first name here. Create a password. And if you don't, passwords, of course, have some strength compliance rules to them. In this case, you have to have a number. I believe the compliance rules are a lowercase letter, a capital letter, one number. It has to be at least 8 characters in length. So I'm going to go ahead and change the password and retype it in. And make sure when you retype the password that they match. As part of the account recovery process, we have you answer some security questions. So I'm going to go ahead and answer those. And I'm going to search for my organization. As mentioned, if your organization is already in CDX, we'll be able to link your account to that organization. I'm going to go through the process of setting up a new one, assuming that mine does not exist here. So no data was found matching, so we're going to request the organization be added. Without reloading the screen, it comes up to give you the organization info. So here I'm going to put my office address. And my email address. And submit the request for access. So as you can tell, you're noted that you will be getting an email confirmation message. Basically, it's just to confirm you are who you say you are at the email address that you had put in. So I'm going to go check my email. And it does come through fairly quickly. It has already arrived, so I have my link to go ahead and validate my account. So it will ask me for the login and password I just created. And here's where we go through the identity proofing process. Now, if there are troubles with the electronic process or you do not feel comfortable giving that information online, there is a paper form that you can sign and mail postal to the EPA for them to identity proof your account and then manually approve the account so that you can get into weeps. The LexisNexis process is instantaneous, so it is going to be much faster for you to get into weeps by simply going through the electronic identity proofing process with LexisNexis. And, of course, there's some guidance here that you can read at your convenience. Go ahead and check that you have reviewed the LexisNexis guidance and proceed to verification. So I've mentioned it's going to ask for a few pieces of personally identifying information here, including my home address. Date of birth, apologize for my typing. And the last four digits of your Social Security number. So I'm going to make sure that everything's correct here for identity proofing and hit submit. And once you are identified by LexisNexis, it will ask you to answer five more security questions that you will be required to answer one of them anytime you sign a document within weeks or for any other CDX from air enabled application. So I'm going to answer a couple more security questions. And as you tell, there's a pretty wide variety of questions here, so hopefully there's five that you can answer and be able to consistently remember the answer to through the years. Go ahead and save those. And now you actually move on to signing your first document. So the electronic signature agreement given to you by EPA is something that you actually also sign electronically. So they have the agreement here. Can read through it at your convenience when you do register. You can, once again, postal mail this, but we're going to go ahead and sign the agreement electronically, accept the certification. And we're going to go ahead and put in the login we just created. Answer one of the security questions. And go ahead and sign. And now that that electronic signature agreement has been signed, you'll notice that I am associated to the CDX role of export certifier. And when I click that, I will actually be redirected into WEETS. Now, before I go and demo the WEETS application itself, I would like to field any questions that are coming up regarding CDX and the registration process. So Janae, are there questions out there?
I'm going to ask Eva if she can read the questions. For some reason, my screen won't fully maximize on the questions.
Sure.
Okay.
Question number one. Will there be a login type for IT support / developers that will be working on connecting to the web services?
Mm-hmm. So right now, and I will actually defer to Janae or Roy to give further guidance on it. Right now, we have web services. If you heard references to web services at this time during this presentation, they may have been referring to the electronic services that we have set up between Canada and Mexico that send the notices back and forth with them electronically. Right now, there are no web services available for registration or for directly submitting notices and reports to WEETS.
The next question is, can you be registered as a certifier for two or more organizations? For example, we have a Canadian entity that I would have to certify. We are two separate organizations.
Yes, you can be a certifier for multiple preparers, or you can actually be a certifier for multiple exporters. Now, within WEETS, the notices themselves, you can change the exporter information on those notices, and as a certifier, you can sign for them. So there's going to be multiple ways around that, depending on the specific situation. But yes, Canadian preparers will be able to have multiple certifiers, recognizing that they may be preparing notices for multiple U.S. exporters, and U.S. exporters can have a relationship with multiple Canadian preparers. Having them submit the notices to them to be signed and submitted to EPA.
Next question. Where do you set up as a preparer after you create your certifier role?
So at this point, if you are an export certifier, you shouldn't need to separately sign in as a preparer, because a preparer can do everything that a certifier can do. If you need a different exporter to sign the notice that you may be preparing, if you are a certifier in the U.S., you would simply need to set them up as the exporter of record for the notice within weeks.
I believe this is answered, but when registering as a preparer, is the process the same?
The process is similar. So the first part of the process, where you are entering your personal information, you're creating your login, and you're creating your organization address, that part is the same. Of course, on the screen where you have to select a role, select whether you are a preparer or a certifier, you would select preparer. What happens differently then is once you get the email confirmation that forces you to click the link to make sure that you are who you say you are by your email address, and you log in again, at that point we'll ask you for the email address of a certifier in CDX, so that CDX will email that particular contact, and if they have a CDX account already, they will be able to validate you as a preparer on their behalf, and they'll be able to sign an electronic service agreement stating that you will be able to prepare notices for them to sign. If that user does not have an account in CDX, they will be also given a link to the setup process, where they will be able to go through the export certifier account creation process that I just went through. And as shown, it is a couple of steps, but it is fairly straightforward from the certifier's perspective.
Another question. How do I delete myself as a certifier and or preparer if my status changes?
If your status changes, I would most likely need to refer you to the CDX help desk to delete a particular role. I would like to look into that offline. I'm not 100% sure. There may be a way to do it within CDX itself. As far as I know, there is not at this point. But I would like to have that referred to offline just so I can confirm.
Okay. There are no more questions related to this particular issue. I do want to reiterate that any questions that go unanswered at this point will be answered in writing under the FAQ, so please check on that. As for the person who keeps asking where to find the OECD green and amber lists, please refer to the oecd.org website.
They're incorporated by reference in Part 260.
Which is what they were asking. Where
and
do we
the
find
document them? Is in the docket for the rulemaking.
Better.
And I believe we've also posted a link on the website, too.
So it's in a number of places. Do we have time for another question for Steve? Because another one just popped. Another question for Steve. As a certifier for a company with many different sites, does each site require a signature?
So each site will not require a separate account. Every notice and every report submitted to EPA will require a signature. That said, once you are identity proofed and you put in the exporter, and you'll be able to change which exporter and which export site are being used on a per notice basis in WEIS. And when we get to that part of the demonstration, I'll try to remember to point that out.
Okay, why don't we move on to WEIS?
Okay, I'm actually logging into a different account. When the new account is created, of course, you don't have any new notices in your account. For users whose email address or company name match the exporter's company name or email address of record in WEIS, those notices will appear as process notices in your account. And that actually comes with the advantage of being able to duplicate those notices. And later on in the demonstration, I will show the duplication procedure there. But to see other notices that have previously been approved by EPA, the notices will need to match either the company name of record or the email address of record on your CDX account, and those will be preloaded into your account as process notices for you to view. So just click on the export certifier role, and that's what's actually going to take me in from CDX to WEETS. So the CDX process, as mentioned, sets up your account that's shared across multiple EPA applications and does your R-identity proofing to allow you to do signatures. Now, WEETS is the system where all the notices and reports are actually put in for submission to EPA. So this is the first page you will come to when you get into WEETS. Up in the upper right-hand corner, we have a little box for viewing profile, logging out. As mentioned, there's a quick reference guide. It's a Microsoft Word document you'll be able to download and read. It has a lot of the same screens in the slides with a number of call-outs and a lot more detail to help you as a reference. The links to tech support will open up an email for you to be able to email myself and Janae to get additional assistance. And there's another logout button here. These are on every page along with the items on this menu bar. So this home link on every page will take you right back to this page. Annual reporting will take you to the annual reporting home, which we will demo later in this. And this notices section has a drop down where you will be able to see the various tables of your exports and imports for the maquiladoras, imports that Laura referred to before. And you can start bulk amendments from this notice drop down here. To create a new notice, we have a new notice button which is on the main page and all the main tables. There's a quick search feature here that if you have a notice in your account with an EPA ID, if you start typing in the EPA ID or the foreign ID, it will come up with a list of notices that match that, so you can go directly to that notice without having to search through all your tables if you need to go directly to a particular notice. Over here, we have counts of all the notices that are in draft or awaiting signature and the pending and process notices. And over here, we also have the last five notices that you viewed if you needed to continue work on something that you recently did. Now, the notice process in WEETS and for EPA pretty much goes as follows. So notices, when you create a new notice or you duplicate a process notice for editing, that notice goes in as a draft. You can continue editing that and continue making changes to that until the point that you sign the notices. Now, before signature, there's a tab that says, do you want to proceed for signature? When you click that, the notice goes from draft to pending signature. For certifiers, you'll be able to sign the notices then and there. And for the export preparers, you will need to assign the notice over to a certifier in order for them to sign and submit it to EPA for further processing. Now, once a notice is signed, it goes into read-only mode. A copy of record is uploaded to CDX, and the notice goes into the pending process, where EPA will work with the foreign entity, make sure that the notice is electronically sent to, whether if it's Canada or Mexico, or if it's another foreign entity, to send the paper notice to them. And at that point, we wait for an acknowledgement of receipt, and then, of course, a determination from the foreign entity, whether it is consent, objection, or neither consent nor objection because it is not regulated hazardous waste by the country of import. Let me go and show some of the notice tables here for some of the draft notices. So all the tables that you would come to through here for the different statuses will look like this and function very similarly. All of these notices, so when you start getting large amounts of draft or large amounts of process notices in your account, you do have paging, control the number of entries that show up on a page. You can page between the different pages on the table. It all does this without reloading. You can sort by any of the fields here, ascending or descending, country notice number. They're all sortable. And you can also search by text for anything in the table if you want to narrow down and filter exactly what's in there, all dynamically. Now, the actions for the different notices will differ somewhat. So, for example, a process notice, you'll be able to amend those notices if you need to add transporters or ports for these notices. Here, clicking the number lets you go to edit them. For anything that has been submitted to EPA, you will not be able to edit, but you'd only be able to view. And since these are draft notices, there's a review for signature and a delete action here. And, of course, anything that's been submitted to EPA, you will not be able to delete. So those actions will vary based on the types of notices that you're looking at. And if you go to the homepage and you want to see summaries of all your notices, there's a View All Notices link here, which will bring up all of the exports and imports that have been submitted electronically. And as I'm going to continue to note, the imports are only for those that are not not regulated as hazardous waste in the country of export. So those are the ones you'll be submitting electronically, and we will not go over import creation today, but just the export process. The import process is very similar. So at this point, I'm going to go ahead and start the new notice creation process. And here you can select whether the notice is an export or import. Select the receiving country. And though we have a lot of notices going back and forth with Canada, so I'm going to go ahead and select that. Select the type of waste management here, whether it's disposal or recovery. For disposal, CRTs are not available. It's regulation that CRTs that are being exported, depending on the country, would have to go as recovery recycling. So if you're going to do CRTs, you're going to do recovery recycling. In this case, I'm going to do recovery recycling of some non-CRT waste. When I hit continue, it lets me know which subpart of the regulations this particular export falls under. Once you go ahead and hit continue to confirm that, none of this data can change. Of course, it's only four or five pieces of information, so if there's a mistake here, you have to start over. But that shouldn't be too big a deal since it's very early in the process. So we're going to go ahead and hit continue to actually go ahead and create the export notice. At this point, you get your notification that a new notice has been created. And we have multiple tabs up here for collecting all the information. And the general notice information, transportation, waste streams, which you can enter multiple, and then review for signature. Now, of course, before you can submit for EPA or be allowed to sign, there's a lot of required information here. So anytime you go to the Review for Signature tab, before we give you the ability to sign or for preparers to go ahead and select a signatory, you need to make sure that all this information is completed. For instance, here you don't have departure dates, you need a waste generator, receiving facility, et cetera. This information is also highlighted with red asterisks on all the data collection screens. And on some of the screens, when you go to submit, you will get notifications saying that needs to be filled in before you get to this review for signature tab. So we're going to head back to notice information. If this is already a notice that's working with another country that has a identifier for this notice, we're going to go ahead and put that in. So we're going to have this going for about a year. Some optional fields or technology employed and reason for export, I'm going to go ahead and fill them out anyway. And now when we get down to adding the different vendors for the notice, the interface for them is all really similar. The notice preparer is automatically filled out with your account information down here, so that's done for you. If you want to add an exporter, there's a button here for adding an exporter. And you get this screen that basically asked for the company name, location, and contact information. Now, if the exporter has, if we have them listed as an exporter of record within Weets already, we can go ahead and look them up using this vendor search tool up here. Once you start typing various vendors that are already in Weets for selection up here, just as note, this is only our test system, so if you notice that I'm using existing exporters, transporters, et cetera, this is not actual submission data. This is just data that I'm using to pull and use for demonstration purposes. So I'm going to select this vendor so you don't have to watch me type it anymore. Hit create, and as you'll notice, the vendor appears in the table. For exporters, you can only add one. When it comes to transporters and other vendors, depending on the notice type, you will be able to add multiple. So I know we need a waste generator for this one. Just going to use the same company for convenience. Importer is not required, so I'm going to skip that for now, but receiving facility is, so I'm going to go ahead and add a receiving facility. In this case, I'm just going to select the first one in the list here when I'm looking for a recycler. One of the things with receiving facilities, you will need to select disposal and recovery codes that apply to that specific facility. They may differ between your interim and final facilities. So for here, and you can select multiple to attach to a particular receiving facility. So I'm just going to go ahead and select three of them here and go ahead and hit create. And the DNR code is here, the record. If I wanted to add a second receiving facility, I can do that. Now I have multiple receiving facilities attached to this, so I will hit save and continue now to continue to the next tab. And as mentioned, with transporters, you can add multiple. It's the same as receiving facilities. But one difference with transporters is that the transporter can be from any country, whereas the receiving facility needs to be in the country of import. And, of course, the exporter needs to be in the country of export. So a lot of the other points of contact you will be adding to the notice will be country-specific, whereas transporters are not. So I'm just going to go ahead and put in one or two transporters. Of course, mode of transport and packing types are required. Mode of transport, whether it's land, air, or sea. Let's do this by road and by train. Packaging truck types, what are you actually sending across? We'll say we're doing some barrels and some boxes. Special handling requirements, once again, not required, but I'm going to go ahead and put it in. For shipment frequency, you can tell us how often you ship either annually, quarterly, monthly, weekly, or daily. We'll do some arithmetic for you. So say you know that you're doing 10 a month. We know that that's going to be 120 per year, so that's what we'll put into the system. Now, ports of exit and ports of entry. So the ports of exit are where it's leaving from in the U.S. You can select multiple. And you can type ahead. So when you click in the boxes, you can tell you get a drop-down listing all the ports. And, of course, if you don't feel like scrolling through to find yours, you can start typing in what you're looking for. So let's do Huron. Let's see if there's an Erie in there. Yeah, there's a couple of Eries. So we have a ports of exit selected. And for ports of entry, we can do the same thing. If there's no Ontario listed, but we got Quebec in there. And Vancouver. Transit countries, in the case that the export will be stopping somewhere other than the final destination country, you'll need to list those. In this case, we're going to just skip that for now, but all you need to do is you select yes and provide that information. Save and continue. And then you go on to the waste stream tab. As mentioned, every notice can have multiple waste streams. We're going to go ahead and start adding one. For the demo today, we're going to add two so I can show the ordering feature on this waste stream page. Now, since we select the non-CRTs, you'll have to give us a little bit more specification at the waste stream level about what is being sent across, slabs being one of the options, manifested, RCRA waste, mixed waste, and other universal waste. Depending on which of these you select, we tell you whether or not a manifest will be required. For slabs, if not, let's go ahead and continue using slabs. Waste management codes, you need to tell us at a waste stream level, once again, what recovery or disposal options and technologies are being used. I'm going to select one of those. The DOT IDs or UN codes are all listed in here for selection. And when you do select a DOT ID, we automatically select a hazard class for you, which you can remove if inappropriate. And you can, and for the management codes, DOT IDs, and hazard classes, you can select multiple. EPA waste codes, the type ahead for this is very similar to the ports ones, where you can start typing and select your waste codes. And select one there. And as Laura mentioned here, I mean, everything OECD required, so we're going to go ahead and select an OECD code. A lot of these other codes are optional. They may be required by Canada, but we do not require them. A lot of these codes can be found in the IWIC code. And we need a waste description. So for here, I'm just going to put waste stream 1. If you're going to be shipping this at a different frequency than everything else in the notice, you have the opportunity to enter it here. And, of course, we need to know with this waste stream how much is going across. For CRTs, your only option is going to be kilograms, but for all other waste, you have these units to select. I'm going to go ahead and do metric tons. Let's do 100,000 metric tons and save the waste stream. I'm going to go ahead and add one more waste stream just so I can show the ordering feature. And now, since the Canadian notice offices may be particular about which order the waste streams are entered in, and if you have multiple waste streams and you accidentally skip one for some reason when you're putting them in, you can simply drag and drop to reorder them. In this case, I'm going to take waste stream 2 here, move it up, so now it becomes the first in the order here. And that kind of makes sorting a little bit easier. So if you're dealing with a notice with 60 or 80 waste streams, and you accidentally get them out of order and need to reorder them, that's all you need to do is just take one of the rows and you can drag it into the appropriate place. Now we're going to go ahead and continue. And everything is good for signature at this point. So we're going to continue the signature. Being a certifier, I'll be able to sign immediately. Notice preparers will be requested to select a certifier. As mentioned before, a preparer can be working with multiple U.S. exporters, and they will need to select the appropriate one to sign the export and submit it to EPA. So I hit continue signature. Basically, you get a little warning that once this document is signed and submitted, the notice cannot be changed or corrected. So let's go ahead and sign the notice. Go ahead and put in my CDX login ID. Answer one of my security questions, and go ahead and sign. At this point, our notice officers will get email notification that the notice has been signed. You're redirected to your homepage saying it's been signed and submitted, and the number of notices for pending went up from 26 to 27 here. And if we go ahead and scroll through these looking for the ones that were submitted by date, we have two of them submitted here. One of them was when I was setting up, testing everything before this demonstration, and here's the one that was just submitted. As you can tell, notice, we're going to be pending foreign government response at this time. And once EPA receives the foreign government response, they will enter it into WEETS, and you'll be able to see your notices in the process table. So let's go ahead to the process notices. So you can get to them by either clicking the number by the process notices or go to process export notices here. And if we go to view one of these, as you can tell, everything here is read-only. All the information for the exporters, importers, ports, et cetera, is listed here. And under the waste stream details for our process notices, under each particular waste stream, there's a termination. So if you have a notice with multiple waste streams, keep in mind that there may be a determination, a different determination for each waste stream, that you may have a notice with 10 waste streams where 9 of them are consented to and 1 is objected, or it's not regulated as hazardous waste, so you'll get neither a consent nor object determination from EPA in that case. All right, one of the handier features, if I go back to the processed export notices, is the ability to duplicate a notice. So for a notice that it's been a year, time's up and it's time to resubmit this notice, you can go ahead here and select duplicate. There's also on the notice details page, for in-process notices, you'll get a button here that says duplicate, but for the notices that are pending or processed already, the link here allows you to duplicate the notice. So I'm just going to go ahead and hit duplicate. Yes, are you sure? And that was 13443 that I duplicated. As you can tell, I now have a new notice, 13519, where all of the receiving facilities, waste generators, exporters are filled in. Of course, you're going to need to put in a different period of time for the shipment. But all of your waste streams are here. And all of your transporters or ports are present here. So with very little modification to an old notice, you'll be able to go ahead, review, and sign this notice for resubmission to EPA. So once you go through something, if you're doing the same thing year after year, the duplication process is a real time saver. And finally, for the notice submission piece, if we go back to the processed export notices, you have the ability to amend notices through weeks. So we're going to go ahead and select to amend 13444 here. And for amendments, as compliant with regulation, there's a very limited set of data that can be amended. If you need to add transporters or ports, you can do that. As you can see here, if you need to change the overall shipment frequency, you can do that as well. And for waste streams, you can amend individual waste streams, but only a very limited quantity, and it should be very different, very specialized cases that this happens to. Adding waste codes to include new waste under previous consented waste stream is not allowed. But if you need to add the EPA waste codes, DOT IDs, and hazard classes, or change the waste quantity or shipment frequency at the waste stream level, you can do that in weeks as well. And once everything is filled out that you would need to for an amendment, you can go to the action tab to sign in the same way that you signed a notice. And one final feature, if you need to add a transporter or a port to multiple notices, we do have an amend multiple notices feature here where you'd be able to go in, select multiple notices here, by clicking the amend multiple notices, you can see which ones you're working with that you just selected, where you can, as mentioned, all you can add for multiple notices is transporters and ports. But this will allow you to create multiple amendments at once. Each one of them will still need to be individually signed, but at least this shortens the process of amendment creation at this point. So before we go on to the annual reporting piece, I feel like I went through that a little quickly, and I apologize if I did. Janae or Eva, can you let me know what questions we have, and I can answer some questions before we go on to annual reporting.
Sure. Give me one second. Is there a select all category for waste codes or something that allows you to select more than one at a time?
So that actually has been a point of discussion through our beta usage of our changes in weeds. At this time, there is not. EPA wanted to have more specifics in regards to what was in each waste stream and not allow that at this point. I recognize that in the discussion there are certain needs that there may be residue and that you're concerned about, or there's other business cases for that, but it was an internal EPA decision to not have that happening. I think for more details and understand the business side of it, I would have to refer to Janae on that.
And actually, I'm going to also, Laura, feel free to join into this conversation, because what we are trying to do, because what happens is we receive these notices where the waste codes will be selected, all of them will be selected for every waste stream. But it's kind of clear based on description that not every waste code actually would apply to those waste streams. So it kind of creates what we call junk data. And we've received some complaints about sort of like, are these things actually really applicable to these waste streams? And so we thought best way to address this at this point is to have everybody actually pay attention, not pay attention, but to really decide if in fact every one of those waste streams apply, those waste codes applies to the waste streams. If that is actually true, then you need to select all of those things instead of just handing lists over for every waste stream. And like we said, based on the description, some of those waste codes not even really being applicable.
Yeah, this is Laura. I will chime in. We actually discussed this in the preamble to the proposed rule, that we had considered limiting the number of waste codes that could apply to a given waste stream. We asked for comments on that. We asked for comment as to when it would be needed, because it's certainly not every next export notice, but there are certain export notices that come in that list every waste stream, even though the physical description, as Janae said, it seems highly unlikely that all those waste codes could apply to that waste stream description. We got comments back on the rule that stated that, yes, indeed, it was important to only list the actual waste codes, but that in certain cases it would be appropriate to list all, and that please don't limit that. And as a point of fact, in the final rule, as I believe as discussed in the preamble, we did not limit that. So you can click every waste code, but we want it to be a conscious decision, and we want you to go through all the waste codes and really make sure each one of them would apply to that waste. That's all.
Okay, let me see. Let's see. You can add in multiple importing facilities when creating an export notice, but you can't assign a waste stream to a specific importing facility. Does request for consent for that waste stream go to all listed facilities in that case?
So from a weeds perspective, you're correct. The receiving facilities and the exporters are all attached at the notice level, and at the waste stream level, while we do ask for the disposal and recovery codes, that can be matched to the receiving facility. We do not enforce a relationship between any of the vendors, whether it's the exporters or the receiving facilities. We do not enforce any relationship between them and the waste streams. So when you do end up submitting to EPA, will not have that relationship defined. This is the way that WEATS has been operated internally for years, so we're not changing the notice structure, and there's been no problems with the consent process, given the way that it is put in, but at this point we do not collect that data to associate a waste stream with a particular exporter or receiving facility.
And this is Laura. Under the regulations, if you list multiple facilities, you are listing them to manage all the wastes that are listed for that notice. And in point of fact, if you're listing multiple facilities, it should be an interim facility and a final facility. You wouldn't be listing multiple final facilities.
Okay. We have been submitting applications to both Canada and EPA at the same time. If I understand properly, now I will have to apply to Canada and wait for their file number and reference that in the EPA application, correct?
No. That's not required. It's optional for you to put in the notice number if you know it, the foreign notice number, but it's not a required field, right, Steve?
Correct. Correct. I believe there's even, I'm just going to go to the page to confirm, I believe there is even a note that says so much that you may have this, but it is not required.
And also, just to give you guys the heads up, I mean, and I'm sure Laura said this earlier, the reason that you may want to get that permit number ahead of time is that Canada is trying to do matching, and it makes the process easier for them when they can take our U.S. number, and then the U.S. number also lists the foreign identification number, which is their permit number, and then they can say, oh, these two things are supposed to match. So it just makes the process a lot easier for them, but in fact, it is not required by our regulations.
Right, and that's exactly what we know in the system. It's not required for EPA, but the Import Country Permit Authority may require its process.
I am a Canadian importer of U.S. waste. I want to prepare notices for my U.S. customer. I am already registered in CDX as a preparer. Can you show me or tell me the steps that I should follow in CDX when I need to have the notice certified?
Right now, because I'm logged in as a certifier, I would have to get a preparer account. But what ends up happening is when you have a notice that you've either duplicated or started new, and it is in draft, you would go here, you fill out all the information as we did in the demo, and when you go to review for signature, where it says ready to sign, everything is filled out, and you hit continue. Instead of going to the page where you actually do a signature, you'll get a very simple drop-down page that shows all of the U.S. certifiers that you're associated with, and you'll get a page that says something along the lines of, please select a U.S. certifier to sign this notice and submit it to EPA. You'll select them from the drop-down, hit submit, we will send them an email, and it will show up in their queue as a waiting signature, so they will be able to go in and sign it on your behalf.
Are we going on time?
Maybe a couple more questions, and then we'll move on to annual reports.
Will the API for the e-manifest system be available when WEATS goes live?
At this point, we are receiving some e-manifest data. We are in the initial stages of doing the parsing and having that set up as a regular feed. It is projected to be live and completely operational by the end of the month when the new rules go into effect.
But e-manifest isn't
going
to live for change. No. I'm sorry if I misunderstood the question. So what I was actually referring to is an AES feed where we get the quantity shipped into WEATS. And we are able to record that. As for any system outside of WEATS, I would defer to Roy on that. But right now, we are getting data from AES and parsing it within WEATS.
Yeah, this is Laura. Let me take that one. AES is Automated Export System. It's run by U.S. Customs and Border Protection. And yes, that system is live, and what Steve said is correct. E-manifest is a separate system run by EPA, as you know, and that is going for, I believe, a full public release in 2018. So it will not initially be available when WEATS goes live, because right now export notices are live and export annual reports are live in WEATS. So they're two separate systems. We've consciously designed in some overlapping elements, such as consent numbers on manifests and manifest tracking number information in the AES filing, but they are separate systems on separate timelines.
We have multiple EPA import applications, but they are very similar with the same transporters and ports. For each new application, will we be able to reference a list, or will we have to select all the transporters and ports?
So if they are very similar, what I would recommend doing is using the duplication feature, because the duplication feature just creates a draft. So if you have a notice with 100 transporters and 50 ports of exit, 50 ports of entry, and you don't want to enter them, I would go into that notice, click the duplicate button, start the notice new, make the minor changes you need to do everything else, and submit it from there. At this point, WEIS does not have individual saved lists or address books for the different vendors or any sort of favorites functionality for the ports. So I recommend using the duplication feature as your most time-saving feature in WEIS.
Yeah, why not at this time we move on to the annual reports, and then if there's time and there's still more questions on export notices versus annual reports, we can answer some more of those then.
Sounds good. Okay, thank you for keeping track of time for me. I'm not seeing the counter on my screen, so I have a full screen. So if I'm running a little, I think I'm running pretty good on time now. So we'll go ahead and continue and let me know if I'm starting to run short and should wrap things up for questions. But that said, the annual reporting piece is on the shorter side compared to the notices. So from any screen in WEIS to get to the annual reporting homepage, you can do that from the menu on the upper left. So this is the annual reporting homepage. It's pretty simple. From here, you can start a new report by selecting the report year and typing the report name. We also have your in-progress reports for anything that has not been signed and submitted to EPA. And we have a list of submitted reports where you can download the Excel feed in Excel what has been submitted to EPA. Now, the annual reports, when you select a year, we give you a list of notices that where the consent for shipment period falls within that year. So if you select 2014, you might get a notice that goes from February 2013 to February 2014 available. You may get something that goes December 29th, 2014 through December of 2015, or you can get something that's just 2014 in there. But all of those will be available for selection when starting your annual reports. Now, each of the annual report homepage, you'll see a little question mark up here. It's just something we put in for some extra guidance to give you some instructions and repeat things like I just said for reference if you're having a little bit of trouble. So let's go ahead and start a report. So in this case, I have three notices in my testing account where we have something in the consent period falls in 2014. So for this, I'm going to go ahead and click Continue Report. Now, if you're a notice preparing, you're preparing these notices for a particular exporter, you'll be able to select the individual notices. Or if you're already a certifier, you can simply select them all and move forward with that. So I'm going to go ahead and continue report. So when you start the report, the first thing we need to know are the site and mailing addresses for the reports. Now, this information is similar to what you should already be submitting to EPA. Once again, the site address, if you're preparing for another exporter, you'll want to put their information in as the site address. We, by default, just put your account information in there, so you'll need to go ahead and change that. Your mailing address, you'll also need to, you'll either need to say it's the same as the site address, or you'll need to have a different mailing address put in there. If you're missing a required field here and you update contact info, we'll point it out to you before allowing you to submit. So let's go ahead and put that back. And update the contact info. Now the waste stream and transporter screens are very similar. They are actually very dynamic screens. So based on the notices that you selected, we organize everything for the EPA report by receiving facility. And under each receiving facility, we have the notices associated with that receiving facility. And under each notice, we have the individual waste streams associated with that notice. So there's a bit of a hierarchy to the way that this is defined at EPA's request. If for some reason all this data, once we get going with all of the electronic submissions regularly, all this data should be able to be pulled from WEETS. As mentioned, this quantity shipped, while it's blank now, once we are regularly parsing the data from AES, we will be able to fill this out on your behalf. If you need to, for some reason, add a receiving facility and notice and waste stream, you can do that here. Clicking the plus here for adding a receiving facility, you basically ask the same name, address, city, state, and zip to add another one of these. You can edit that information if you need to. You can add an individual notice, or you can add a waste stream to a notice here. But hopefully, once everything is aligned in WEETS, this information should all pre-populate for you and shouldn't need to add anything. So as Laura mentioned, each of the waste streams has a consent number that's comprised of the notice ID, the year the notice ID was created, and the waste stream with an E for exports in there. All of your waste stream descriptions as put into WEETS are going to be there. And actually, in case there are any errors, everything on this particular row, except for the consented quantity, will be editable dynamically. As you can tell, if I click consented quantity, I'm not able to edit it. But if I go to another field, like if there's a missing UN code for some reason, I would be able to go in here and update that. OECD codes and EPA codes are text fields that you can update dynamically. The quantity shipped, as mentioned, if we are getting that from AES, that will be pre-populated, but for now, I'm going to fill that in manually. And if there's any change that needs to be made to the annual frequency or quantity units, that can be made. Of course, there is some minor validation. If you try to put something in non-numeric into the quantity shipped, we don't let you. So everything here except for the consented quantity, you can update on a field-by-field basis, or you can edit the whole waste stream if you need to. And as mentioned, if you get into notices with multiple, with a lot of waste streams in them, we give you paging so it's not overtaking the page too much. Our transporters are very similar. The only thing we ask for and is required for the transporters is the name of the transporter and the EPA ID of the transporter. For foreign transporters, of course, you don't need a EPA ID. For U.S. transporters, you will, and it needs to comply with the formatting standards for EPA IDs, which are, three letters followed by 10 digits, or 9 digits, excuse me. So you can edit all that on the fly, and once again, it's organized in the same way the waste streams are. If you have a receiving facility on either the transporters or waste stream tab, it will show on both of them, same with the notices. And adding a transport, of course, will just show up here. And we do get some help and guidance here as needed. The waste stream reduction statement that is required an even number of years, we give you text boxes to put that information into WEETS and submit it.
Hey, Steve, this is Laura. I just wanted to break in. The WEETS did not require the entry of an EPA ID number for a foreign transporter because there's no way for WEETS to know whether or not that foreign transporter is driving within the United States or transporting within the United States. To the extent a foreign transporter is operating within the United States, they would have to have an EPA ID number and it should be entered. But because there's no way to know that from the notice process, WEETS doesn't make that a required entry for foreign transporters. It's the exporter's responsibility.
Appreciate the additional clarification on that. Okay, so I've saved the waste reduction statement, and now I can go on to certify. If you want to print an Excel or PDF copy. You can also do that from this page. So here you click that you certify that what you're submitting is true, and you go ahead and continue to sign. And as you can tell, it's actually the same signature process that you go through for notices. So if you were a preparer, you would have to select a certifier to sign this notice for you. Being a certifier, I can go ahead and do that now. Answer security question. And go ahead and sign the notice. And we have the signed notice right here that we signed today. If I go to download it, we'll pull it up in Excel. And right now I'm not sharing the Excel application. I'm just sharing the web browser. So if I were to open this, it would just give you a blank screen. But it is a multi-tabbed Excel document that pretty much lists out everything as it was on the screen you saw, plus some further organization. There's an extra tab that shows all the waste quantity shipped organized by UNID for review by EPA. And that's really all there is to annual reporting. So I'm going to open this up for questions. As I mentioned, this is going to be a shorter version. I know there's a lot more in it, but it's in fewer screens. So once again, I'm going to open this up for questions.
We don't appear to have any more related to annual reports.
No.
There are some additional ones on notices that we could answer.
Let me try to find them.
Absolutely.
Hold on, let me try to find them. Canada has rejected my notice in the past because I had a comma in the wrong place. With the weak system, will I need to amend my notice or file a new one?
You will have to file a new one if they object to it.
That's why we strongly recommend that you share data with your Canadian counterparts to make sure that the entries on both sides match.
Okay, here we go. What is the specific requirement for notifier / submitter? Do they require the person to be a corporate officer?
So, Janae, I'm going to defer to you or Laura on this one for what the legal requirement is for the signatory in WEED. So from the CDX perspective, as you can tell, the validation is a personal validation, but it doesn't actually look at the company that you're associated to. But for the signatory requirements as for what Canada will review or what US EPA will review, I defer to Janae and Laura on that one.
Go ahead, Jane.
Well, what I was going to say is this process is very similar in the sense that it's very similar to the paper process. If you were notifying on behalf of a company before, acting as, say, a broker, what you guys were doing was identifying that you, in fact, are working on behalf of the company. You list the company's information, that contact person, but you say that you are the person, in fact, who's managing the process for them. It is the same thing for whoever the notifier or the preparer happens to be. Laura probably can speak more elegantly concerning the actual legalities of it all, but that's the way the notices have been processed in this office. If, you know, Jane Doe submits on behalf of Mighty Car Inc. and she has listed that person's information, stated that she's the one that's supposed to be receiving all of the information, she is the preparer, then we have no other way to verify that even now that you are, other than to contact the company and find out whether that's right. So it's basically mirroring the paper process that we've always had in place. So the notifier is the same person.
Yeah, and I believe the CDX verification process will verify that your email address and contact information is correct. But beyond that, yeah, if you have an association with that company, you're supposed to have the authority to sign and commit the company to compliance with those requirements, because the when you electronically sign, it's the same, as Janae said, as when you sign a paper export notice with a certification statement stating, I certify that the above information is complete and correct to the best of my knowledge. I also certify that legally enforceable written contractual obligations have been entered into, and that any applicable insurance or other financial guarantee is or shall be enforced covering the transboundary movement. So, you know.
Plus, if in fact, you have someone who is signing up as an, because I don't know if this is a, perhaps the question was asked for security concerns issues, but if someone is signing up as a notifier preparer, as a notifier preparer, the certifier still has to certify that, in fact, that person can prepare for them and put those things together. So,
yeah.
You know, whoever you're preparing for still has to say, yes, this person is my preparer.
Okay, next question. Do I still need to send a paper copy of my annual report to EPA by March 1st? If so, can I download a copy from WEEP?
So I'm guessing, and Laura, correct me if I'm wrong, the annual reports can be submitted electronically without paper going forward, correct?
So long as they're using the CDX signature, yes, but it's not required until the one year after the AES filing compliance date. But we encourage it because, of course, it's more efficient.
So just to be clear for the questioner, that means that both an electronic copy and a paper copy will be accepted by EPA, but no, you do not have to submit both. Excuse me. All right, next question.
As an exporter, I have been required to send copies of export notice requests to our state agency. Is there a mechanism in place to streamline this processes, since this will now be done electronically?
We don't have that capability at this time. You should be able to print it out, though, and send it as you currently have been sending it.
Correct, and that's what I was going to refer to as well. So for the process notices, you do have the ability to print them. So I'm going to go ahead here, process notices. If I select one of them, you do get a print. We'll bring up your OECD PDF of the notice that you can just print off and either email or snail to them as they require.
That's it for the questions for now for annual report. We can move forward.
Okay.
I think there's 20 total minutes, and we need to allot some time for Roy. If any other questions come up, I will be on here till the end of the call. At this time, I'm going to stop my screen share, Gene, and go ahead and allow you to pass on to Roy.
Okay, Roy, if you're on the phone line, feel free to speak up and let us know that you're there.
I'm here. Please go to my single slide.
All right.
Jump ahead.
And yeah. I'm fully aware that I'm what stands between us and the end of this call. So I'll be very brief.
Yeah.
So as we're getting to the slide, let me just kind of inform folks. So all the work that you saw doing your notices with WEETS, just so you know what happens behind the scenes, about once a week, we send over a reference file over to Customs and Border Protection that has all the valid consent numbers in it and some other information as well. And there's different business rules that run that check your customs export filings through the automated export system. And what happens when you file is if you provide a valid consent number and other export information for your shipment, it's about three or four or five data elements. Then you'll get an automatic accept, and your shipment's good to go. And if you don't get that automatic accept, you'll get a reject, and your shipment cannot leave the country. And it's that simple. So it is simple. We urge people to try it out. And so so as the slide shows, that those filings that are made either by the exporters or their broker to Customs and Border Protection's automated export system can be done, I guess, actually there's that, and then there's what they call AES Direct, which is a web screen. And that one's a little more cumbersome if you've got a lot of notices to fill out or a lot of shipments you're doing, because you're typing in everything into those screens. So the AES is more of an automated system where a broker is filling screens out and can do quite a bit more and submit them pretty regularly. So we actually have been pilot testing this. We have four very large slab exporters that have successfully done this for about 50,000 shipments. They seem to be very, very pleased with the process. It has gone swimmingly well. And so it's coming up for those that aren't doing it now. And as Laura had said earlier, that the rule is effective at the end of this year, but there is a phase-in period where you'll have time to get up to speed on doing these export filings with Customs. And then when it looks like, I guess there are a fair number of folks that are getting these done and done successfully, and Laura, you can correct me if I'm wrong, that there'll be another Federal Register notice goes out with an effective date for filing electronically through AES.
You are exactly right, Roy.
Okay. And so there's a little information on the site for the automated export system filings. But more importantly, on January 18th, I think it's at 2 p.m. Eastern, we're going to do a one-hour webinar of what's involved in doing these filings through AES and AES Direct. And so it'll be fairly short, with lots of times for questions and answers. We would urge those that actually do the export filings to get on this webinar. And, Laura, I guess there'll be others that are sending out the announcement for the webinar on the 18th. Is that right?
Yep. Gene, that's correct, right? We're going to post this. Just like we had online registration for this webinar, we'll have online registration for that one.
That is exactly correct, and we'll try to send an email announcement to those who signed up for this event as well.
Well, great. So I would encourage folks to get on. It's short, sweet, to the point, and you'll see it's pretty simple and straightforward. So please join us on the 18th at 2 p.m. And I guess, are there any questions at all?
None have shown, but give us a few seconds.
I think there is. Wait.
One just, are these filings for each shipment or each notification?
Each shipment.
Okay. Next question. Are you still going to do a pilot with Canada?
At this point, we're not calling it a pilot. But yes, we're expanding to all ports, all borders. As of December 31st, if you wish to file, use the electronic border process, you will be able to use the electronic border process. We will not be limiting it to 9 exporters at that time.
Right. I think that's the key point is right now, because of rules that OMB has in place, we're only limited to 9 or fewer exporters, and we expect to get approval on that fairly soon, so that we can open up beyond 9. So, and if you're exporting to Korea or Canada, we welcome you to get in and start trying.
Okay, next question. So what paperwork, if any, will still be required for international shipments? For example, Canadian manifest?
During my section, I was calling them Canadian movement documents. I think they stopped calling a manifest a couple years ago, but yes, there will be the international movement document. That will be a paper form that will need to go from starting point in the United States to end point in the foreign country. And for Canada, it would be the Canadian Movement Document. But you don't have to present that to the customs officer. You will have your internal transaction number, your ITN number, after you have successfully completed your electronic export information filing in the automated export system.
Is AES instead of or in addition to WEETS?
It's in addition. So WEETS is reporting directly to EPA, who then communicates with the other countries on the notices. We're simply using that information so that when the shipment leaves the country, we're able to crosswalk it so that we know it's a legitimate shipment that has consent.
Next question. On the AES website, I noticed that you need software that doesn't appear to be free. Is that the case? We need to have one of the vendors on the listing set us up?
I don't know if that's exactly the case. I think there's vendor software that do AES, and that is true, but if you're using AES Direct, I think it's a website where you have to have an account, and you'd have to look to see what you need to do to get an account.
Okay, this is not an AES-related question. However, if you find a third-party generator to reject the imported waste to, is there not a notification or acknowledgement of consent required to have the third party be able to accept the rejected waste? The rejected waste question, if it needs to be sent elsewhere.
Let's say for a U.S. import shipment, the receiving facility rejects the waste because it contains some waste codes it's not authorized to manage. It has a responsibility to notify the foreign exporter and EPA, and should also notify the state pretty much so that in case you have the terrible luck to have a surprise inspection, you've followed your responsibilities and noted that you're in the process of getting that problematic waste drum out of your facility to the proper place. You go through the process to find an acceptable alternative facility in the United States as quickly as possible. All the parties are, the state agency, EPA, the foreign exporter, they all know this. You get it done as quickly as possible. You find an acceptable alternative. There's not... You don't have to submit a separate notice to get consent for that one shipment, because it's understood that this is not supposed to be a routine rejection. It's supposed to be a handful of shipments that have been found to contain some mystery waste, or I don't know, your boiler blew up, and you can't manage stuff temporarily. But it's not supposed to be a routine thing. So we didn't build in the regulations that you have to go through the full notice and consent process for that alternate facility. Just have to make sure that it is authorized to manage the waste in question for whatever reason. Everybody gets informed, everybody knows about it, and the waste goes there.
No other questions. Let's give it a few seconds to see if something pops.
Okay.
And just a reminder, if you haven't sent your questions in, you'll need to use the Q&A box, which appears in the lower right side of your screen. There's a thin line at the bottom of that box where you can click on your mouse cursor and type your message in. Some of you have been raising your hands electronically in the Adobe environment, and while I appreciate you doing so, to actually submit your question, you'll need to type it up electronically using that Q&A window, again, towards the lower right of your screen.
All right, we'll give a few seconds to see if anybody writes in a question.
And I just want to say, I mentioned this before, the requirement to file electronically in the automated export system is under 15 CFR 30. They're actually U.S. Census Bureau regulations. And the requirement is if you're exporting under a license, an export license, you are required to file an AES regardless of shipment value or destination country, because there's some specific exemptions outside of export license shipments where you don't have to file necessarily if your shipment falls below a certain value or goes to certain countries. However, our AOC that we issue to exporters meets the terms of an export license. This was discussed in the proposed rule preamble in detail. So all exporters that are exporting under an AOC, so exporters of CRTs for recycling, exporters of hazardous waste under parts 262, 266, or 273, they are currently required to file electronic export information in the automated export system. In the old paper process, it was called the exporter's declaration. Now it's the electronic export information under AES. That's where this requirement is. We are just adding a handful of fields to the existing EEI requirements.
Another question for Roy. Will the January 18th, 2017 webinar include using AES Direct and ACE account setup features?
Well, AES is under the ACE umbrella. And so I just actually just sent an email over to Cus asking him for a link and instructions. So I will simply pass on what Customs tells me. Short answer is hope so.
Next question. Will we still get an AOR email, or do we now need to check the system?
Check the system. The system will have an update on the status of where your notice is in the process. That means you'll have access to it. You don't have to worry about whether you received an email confirmation or that. You can literally log into your account to find out where the status of your notifications happen to be in the process.
A couple more seconds to see if additional questions come through.
Let's move on to the next step.
I think we should move on to the next step.
Okay. Well, next step. We hope this has been an informative, God help us, 2.5 hours, almost 3 hours. We appreciate your time. We know it's valuable, and we really want to help you transition to the new process and the new requirements. And if you would like to see additional webinars in 2017, perhaps concentrating on the import requirements in more detail or specific waste like spent lead acid batteries or universal waste, please let us know as part of your feedback on this webinar. If you would like to spend more time on WEATS and CDX and have a separate webinar on that, again, please let us know as part of your feedback on this webinar. There is a wealth of online information, and you can always email questions. If the questions are about the requirements, the regulations, send them to me, Laura Coughlin, at coughlin.laura@epa.gov. I'll answer them. To the extent, for the questions that have come in here that we haven't addressed, and even some that we have addressed during the webinar, we will be updating the frequent questions list. So check that to see if your question has been addressed, because we'll be adding to them as we clear the responses. If you have specific questions about WEATS or CDX, the question should go to Janae Tatum and Steve Miller, and their information is up on the screen. Online in addition to the frequent questions, there's a slide on the URL for the Federal Register publication. There is a final rule page on EPA's website that discusses how the final rule is going effective December 31st, 2016. That does not mean all the requirements are applicable at that time, which is why we have separate compliance dates and why we broke down requirements that apply to export and import shipments that don't currently have consent and export and import shipments that do have written consent issued as of December 31st. Because each of those two bins have different sets of requirements. There are some requirements that are common to both of them, like listing consent numbers on RCRA manifest. But there are others, such as EPA ID numbers, that only apply to exported import shipments that don't currently have consent, because we wanted to make sure that facilities and individuals had the time to apply. Now, we did not do that with maquiladora shipments, because consent is a very key and critical process. So, you can look at the overview page, where if you don't like looking at the flowcharts are available from the overview of the import and export requirements. But it's also presented in a tabular format, if you like going through that. And it walks it through notice requirements, EPA ID requirements, manifest requirements that are specific to import and export documents. And then, of course, we've got two frequently asked questions. The one that's specific to the final rule is actually more geared towards, is this rule going in effect in all 50 states as of December 31st? The answer to that, yes, it is. This is HISWA. We are actually replacing HISWA rules, Hazardous and Solid Waste Amendments Act rules. And in those cases, it goes into effect in all states as of the date that it's effective federally. As authorized states update their program, then their program, their regulations will operate in lieu of the federal program, the federal ones, you know, to the extent that a state is authorized for imports and exports. But as we noted in the final rule, and in the proposed rule for that matter, because imports and exports are a matter of foreign policy, state regulations are not supposed to substitute in state roles for the EPA ones. Notices have to come to EPA for consent. Only EPA issues consent. States cannot do that. States can require you to submit an additional copy of the notice to them for their information. They cannot issue a consent to you. So that FAQ is geared more towards that. The main FAQ page about hazardous waste imports and exports are where we are going to be posting all the additional topic-related questions as they come up. And with that, I will turn it back over to Jean.
Okay, thank you so very much. Let me go ahead and walk through just a few final reminders before we close out today's webinar. When you participated by signing up for today's webinar, you would have received a registration and confirmation email that has a whole set of instructions on how to join us. The big thing to note in that email, it will point you to something known as the seminar homepage. This is the same URL that you use to check in for today's live event. It's on that very same seminar homepage where you will find links where you may download the presentation materials as well as a number of the resources and websites that were discussed, including the flowcharts, the FAQs, the other guide documents that they've walked through, links to some of the resources online. Again, all of that can be found off of the seminar homepage. I've also included those URLs in the Q&A window as well as under the related URLs box towards the middle right of your screen. Contact information has been shared throughout today's live broadcast, but we also have that information on a presenters tab on the seminar homepage. And I will ask if you could take just a brief moment to fill out an online feedback form to let us know what you thought about today's event. If you can follow the link to the very short online form, you can let us know not only what you thought of the material that was delivered, but also the format and the technology that we used for delivering today's live broadcast. There's a link to that feedback form, which is available under related URLs. I've also included it in the Q&A window. If you happen to be sharing the participation link with multiple people, so you're sitting in a group at in a conference room, each person can actually fill out that feedback form to get their own comments submitted in. And the big thing to note, when you fill out that feedback form, there is a box you can check on that form, which you can use to certify that you participated in the entire event, and you can request a participation certificate. So once you submit your feedback, there will be a participation certificate that will be immediately available for you to view or print, and we'll also email a copy of that to you as well. So again, if you're looking for a participation certificate to document your attendance today, please be sure to fill out that online feedback form. If you happen to be one of the lucky ones replaying the recorded version of today's webinar, those links will still work for you, and you can still share your feedback after watching the recorded version and download or print one of those certificates. I want to thank the over 260 individuals who joined us from all over the country for today's webinar. We did record today's live broadcast, and we'll automatically send information on how to access that recording by email as soon as it's available. I want to thank our organizers and presenters as well for taking time out of their days to offer today's session. And as noted, we'll share information about that upcoming January webinar as soon as it's available. This will be the formal conclusion for today's live broadcast. Thanks for joining us.